I arrived. I don't have to think anymore about this.
That's right. And technology allows us to curate as much as we want. You know, unfollow me if you disagree with me. I'm going to block this person and that person. And wow. Yeah.
Yeah, technology. Well, we can talk about that. And it, talk about the idea that life is not frictionless.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there is friction in life. I mean, this is the truth of it. And so to avoid that is to avoid the kind of richness that's available to us. And as you say, technology is a way of siloing us. In fact, we don't even realize how much we're being siloed. What do you have to say about that and algorithms?
I mean, we live in this miraculous time of technological enhancement and convenience, and it's very easy to believe that technology can solve all our problems and that, you know, anything that is made more convenient is an overall improvement and does not come with any costs. And I just don't think that's true. To lay out one example, I believe that humans have this built-in cycle that makes it possible for us to grow together. And that cycle is the cycle of rupture and repair, rupture and repair. Because if we're going to have a really expressive, free society, where people, you know, we believe in people's ability to say what they mean. And it is also true that people see not with their eyes, but with their whole biographies, then guess what? People saying what they really mean and doing and fighting for what they really believe is going to chafe on other people a lot. It's going to happen. And sometimes that means that, you know, we've gone too far or we didn't consider that, this or that perspective. But in other words, we're going to rupture with each other all the time. It's, you know, there's going to be awkward moments. There's going to be hurtful moments. I've hurt people. I've been hurt by people. That will continue. There is no way that I can hide from that. And I think what we try to do is have ways of hiding from that. And it's made us so very afraid of rupture. And from both directions, I'm, you know, if I'm in that place of fear of this cycle and I don't acknowledge the fullness of the cycle, then I think if I hurt someone, it's over for me. If I'm hurt by someone, it's over for me. And so we won't say what we mean and we won't appear in the places where there might be friction. Because we don't think we can handle it. But again, rupture and repair, we've forgotten about the repair. We can heal with each other. There's forgiveness. There's grace. Sometimes you need time. Sometimes you need a lot of apology. But hey, we figure it out. We can. We're capable. So these are the things that make me go, even if my ChatGPT AI bot is incredibly non-judgmental, and boy, what a patient listener, there's no way that I think that interacting with such a perfect listener who's never going to judge me or rupture with me is the way that I am going to learn about the world. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, these are among the kind, almost spiritual challenges that are facing us. But I think just the opposite. I think I am a pencil and I need to be sharpened. And you don't sharpen a pencil without friction.
That's right. That's
you know
right.
What I mean? So I want to be with people who are going to absolutely challenge my ideas, sometimes rudely. I want to be capable. I want to be the kind of person who is capable of withstanding that, right? Because otherwise I'm cheating myself.
You know, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about how many of us are experiencing quite a lot of despair about politics these days. And in my preparing for this interview and reading your book and researching different things, what I've discovered about myself is understanding and researching another viewpoint that's different from mine, that's totally different, maybe polar opposite from mine, has actually helped me to feel less despair. Do you understand what I'm saying when say that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've sensed the same thing for myself. A lot of people tell me, like, how do you do it? It must be so much stress for you. You're crossing the political divide all the time. And the secret is It's actually calmed me down. It's actually made me less afraid, which does not mean that I'm not staring the risks and truths and things in the face that I see. I mean, not at all. But when I, what has happened to me, you know, as I research the other points of view, inevitably I will correct exaggerations and hyperbole that I had in my mind with something a lot more sanguine. And I go, oh, that's actually a good point. I don't like it. I hate it, but it's a point. I get it. There's a coherence there. So that's one thing. But the other thing is that I tend to do this, you know, when I research other points of view, it's often in conversation with other people. And so those are conversations, are places where I get to kind of test the little part of me that thinks only a bad person can believe this. Right. And then I bring that to this other person, and it turns out, no, they're good people. Of course they're good people. Of course they are. And then you go, oh, okay. So if it's not bad people with these ideas that I think are bad, then there's quite a bit of hope, right? There's quite a bit of hope because we can all appeal to what we agree is good and what we agree is important. The biggest challenge is that we're not giving ourselves the opportunities to do it. Not that the arguments aren't there.
It's true. I mean, because I know that where I live, I have very few people in my life who feel politically different from myself. That's the truth of it. So when that's the work of braver angels, I think, and that's, you work with braver angels in the storytelling part of it.
Yeah, so Braver Angels is the nation's largest grassroots cross-partisan organization working to depolarize us politically, which is a pretty tall order, but we have more than 50 programs. Some of them are skills building workshops, some of them are really incredible debates on some of the most divisive things you can imagine, but debates where the goal is not to crown a winner and a loser, but to engage in a collective search for truth. They're really, really fun. I'm going to chair one next week in Washington State. And we've also done things like the incredible Trustworthy Elections Project, dozens of workshops all over the country, in person and virtual, with an equally balanced group of folks who were really concerned that there was voter fraud in the 2020 presidential election, and people who were really concerned that voter suppression is, you know, keeping people from having the freedom to vote, and bringing those people together, and through going through this process of finding common ground. That process resulted in 727 points of agreement among all these folks with vastly different points of view. And it's kind of proving this model where, even though we say we're so divided, even though we say we can't stand each other, actually, if you put real people together, real ordinary people, and they feel, you know, safe enough to share what they really think, it turns out we're not that divided at all. So yeah, Braver Angels is doing a whole heck of a lot. We're doing that process again, but with immigration, and it couldn't come at a more critical time.
Oh, exactly. And I'm curious as to how you find these people. I mean, I did participate in some Braver Angel events, and I noticed that in my particular, where I live, there are more liberals than conservatives. So that's who showed up. So it wasn't an even split. And what you're talking about, how do you get people to show up with these opposing viewpoints?
Yeah, well, one thing is that, you know, there's plenty of places where there just is a skew. Like here in Seattle, it's pretty hard to get, you know, even red and blue. But there are other divisions. In Seattle, one of the biggest divisions is sort of deep blue and light blue, and there's plenty of fireworks in between that, you know. So that's one thing, is division anywhere exists, polarity anywhere it exists is worth exploring. The other thing is, if you're talking about Braver Angels in particular, there are programs where we very strictly make sure that there is an equal number of reds and blues, and the program won't even turn on until we have those people represented. But I will say that the entire bridge building space is having this conversation. We want to make sure that we really can, that we're able to reach folks from all over the political spectrum into this work. And some parts of the political spectrum are easier to reach than others. Tends to be that the more moderate parts of red and blue are easier to reach than the more of the wings of the party, the more progressive left, the more MAGA right. It's a little tougher, but it's because folks with those beliefs are just like, no. They're more likely to think that the other side is going to attack them or shame them or that they're just plain wrong. And so it's a little more difficult to be like, no, like come see. Folks are not the threat you think they are, and maybe we can work to understand each other before we skip to the judgment and hate.
Exactly. Has this changed, this work changed your perspective and your activism?
In terms of my political beliefs, online quizzes show me over the years that I haven't really moved in my political beliefs very much at all. Like, I'm still a pretty moderate Democrat, and I've kind of been that. I've got my more progressive issues, and I've got my more moderate issues, but that's where I've been this whole time.
But what has changed through these deeper conversations across polarities?
Yes, the thing that has changed the most, one is the fear. I have a lot less fear about other parts of the political spectrum, a lot less fear about people who hold ideas. And it's just a lot easier for me to picture having conversations about most anything with most anyone. And so I'm really grateful for that because it's kind of made the world my oyster in terms of politics. And I go toward the heat in some conversations, and I end up learning something, sometimes getting really aggravated, but always learning something. So that's the place where I've changed the most.
Yeah. Do you feel like these conversations can help us in institutional reform? Have you seen any tendency toward that?
Yes, there are. So I think of two institutions that are the most relevant: media and politics. In the political realm, I encourage listeners to check out Disagree Better, which is a nonprofit. Spun out of an initiative led by Governor Spencer Cox of the state of Utah, Republican governor, one of the most conservative states in the nation. His leadership has been extraordinary, and it's an initiative to help tell the story of politicians all across America who work together across the political divide and do extraordinary things for their communities. We just tend not to see these stories. Why? Well, let's turn to the media. Because that's another institution that unfortunately has, it's just rife with incentives that, push polarization and push division. Why? Because it sells. Because guess who's demanding it? We, the public, we, the people. We like the dopamine rush of conflict. And so we reward a lot of media who give us the emotional, outrageous headlines with our attention and our clicks. But that's not to say that they are not also quite responsible for the ways that a lot of media in the pursuit of loyal audiences and an attention economy end up affirming a lot of folks' views and become increasingly afraid of challenging their views or complicating their views, because then people won't read it, then people will complain. And so it means that we have fewer spaces that really truly welcome all views into a forum discussion of the type that a democratic republic requires to survive and thrive. So can the work that we do on the small scale with each other in one-to-one conversations impact even those giant institutions? Yes. Yes, it can, because let me tell you, I've spoken with Spencer Cox. I've spoken with, pretty highly placed journalists. And the more that they see people demand this, the less tolerant people become of these kinds of polarizing behaviors of conflict entrepreneurs in the media making money off our division. The more we just say enough, then the more political will, goes behind the politicians to make the changes they need to make, and the more economic incentives build up for the media.
When I watch news media, mostly what I'm trying to tune into is if it's a commentary, if they're making a commentary, I just sort of tune it out, even if I agree with the commentary, because I know it's only showing me that one portion of it. So I'm always looking for, okay, what is the action? What is actually happening on the ground? What is true? I'm not sure that I'm getting the right skew of vision of what's really going on in this country.
I think even us bridge builders, who try to make a profession and a real obsession around this, even we have a really hard time. Where do we invest our time in consuming media that's going to give us the most balanced view? It's very, very difficult. And not only because different outlets tend to focus on different political kind of, values and things and leanings and audiences, but also because these things appear on different formats. So, for example, on the right, some of the most exciting, illuminating, and interesting conversations are happening in podcasts. And podcasts can take a lot of investment of time. The Joe Rogan podcast lasts like 3 hours, each episode, and they're absolutely fascinating. There's podcasts here, there's television here, oh my gosh, it's everywhere. And so to try to consolidate it all is really tough. I really love the work of a few folks who are, I think, quite wonderfully trying to reach across many points of view. And maybe my favorite journalist who does that is named Isaac Saul, and he has a newsletter called Tangle News that's been getting a lot of attention lately because of how committed he is to the craft and responsibilities of journalism and how little he allows himself to get swept up in the biases that can infect corners of journalism. He is very, very careful about language, for example, and how divisive it can be. He slows down with partisan-charged words. He understands that people on the left or people on the right can feel seen or unseen by how you label a certain issue, how you name and frame different issues. He's revolutionary on that, and I hope more people will follow suit.
How does he spell his name just to have
Yeah.
that?
Isaac is Isaac and Saul is Saul. And the newsletter is Tangle News.
Well, we all need this kind of recommendation of good journalism that we can trust, that's trustworthy, that's beyond what is labeled fake news or ultra partisan news. And that's what we're all looking for so that we can get a real bead on what is going on. And then how can I participate in that with my values, with my ethics, with what it is I believe? And then to know my own assumptions and to know my biases, as we talked about earlier. So that's really important. And I know that you may want to give an example of a group that you helped to lead. And this was, I believe, in Oregon. It was in Kings County, was it?
Yeah, so King County in Washington State, that's where Seattle is. But what we did was we found this feature that you put in, you typed in where you were, King County, Washington, and it spit out the nearest county to yours that had voted just the opposite in the presidential election. And this was back for the 2016 presidential election. And what it spit out when you typed in King County, Washington, was Sherman County, Oregon, which is this much smaller county on the border between the two states that's all agriculture, proud wheat farmers going back generations. One thing led to another. And me and the co-founder of the publication that we used to have in Seattle ended up partnering with an extraordinary agricultural agent, in the middle of rural Oregon, Sandy McNabb, who recently passed away. Really miss you, Sandy. And we ended up organizing this incredible experience where folks from Seattle, all liberals, took a bus, rode 5 hours down to Sherman County to be, in the place. And we brought a housewarming gift and they, donated lunch. And before we talked, we even said a word about politics. We did a tour of the wheat fields and we shared that meal. And we talked about each other and we connected as humans. And then, and then we started talking about what is it that makes us come to such different conclusions. That was an extraordinary experience. It taught us a lot. It opened my eyes. And people who weren't on that trip are still talking about it, and I'm still connected to the folks in Sherman County.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And I liked it that you said we related to one another first as human beings in the collective human family first. And that's key, isn't it?
It's very important. We skip over that. On the internet, a non-place that makes us into non-people, we almost always skip over it. A lot of folks even don't even put like a human face on their avatar, just like some cartoon character. I mean, we just caricaturize each other and we skip right over it. But as Brené Brown likes to say, it's hard to hate up close. And when you are up close, I remember I told the story in the book about Laura, who was a young Seattleite in her 20s who was on that trip, and she has blue hair. And she ended up in conversation with, gosh, I forget his name, is it Frank? But this guy, this grizzled farmer with a cowboy hat, and just the most fun photos of them talking and connecting, and the stereotypes that they had about, that they would have had about each other coming in. Yeah, it just all falls away,
Did they become friends?
I'm pretty sure they did follow up afterward. A lot of folks followed up with folks. It's a long drive, 5 hours. So
Yes,
as
that's
far as I
true.
know, there weren't
That's
like
true.
return trips,
Yeah.
but it left people with a lot to think about.
Yes, absolutely. So it, as we said, that the issues are complex, the media can be skewed. It's up to us to actually follow up and learn how to ask these open-ended questions rather than, just spouting our own viewpoint, but ask more, listen more. Yeah, exactly. Any parting things you need to add?
Just a reminder to everyone again, just because I wrote a book about this thing doesn't mean that I'm any good at it most of the time. This is about a practice. This is not about a personality trait. Being curious is not a personality trait, it's a practice. And so it's a lot of kind of coming back. It's taking advantage of the rupture and repair cycle. And always remember too that it only takes one. Curiosity is contagious. So if you tell yourself, I can't have this curious conversation because I would be curious and this other person wouldn't be. Well, don't be so sure. Because if you come in with flexible language, an open tone, a warm heart, lots of research shows, you use more receptive language, the other person will tend to pick up on that and use receptive language too. It's not a guarantee, but it can really happen. So give it a try.
May it be so. Monica, thank you so much for being with us today. I've been speaking with Monica Guzman, and she is the author of I Never Thought of It That Way: How to Have Fearlessly Curious Conversations in Dangerously Divided Times. And to know more about her work, go to her website, moniguzman.com. And she spells her name Moni. Guzman, moniguzman.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3842.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore new dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Monica Guzman, author of I Never Thought of It That Way. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about fearlessly curious conversations.
Hi there, this is Jan Arden, and if you're listening to something fabulous, well, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser University Radio, streaming on the internet at cjsf.ca.
This is broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.